Good morning, everyone. As you kindly said, I am from Loma Linda University. I'm here to represent Drs. McField and Dr. Belliard as well. Okay. I will be speaking about Project Access, which was funded through the Mental Health Services Act in 2009. And it served as a cultural assessment for the San Bernardino County Department of Behavioral Health. And I have no personal financial relationships to disclose at this time. Just to give a brief background about the study itself, I'll be speaking about the results from our interaction with the Vietnamese community. However, we did interact with the Latino community and the African American community as well. And these are some of the questions that were set forth at the beginning of the design of the research project, and I'd just like to emphasize the second one especially. What social and cultural beliefs about mental illness and treatment influence how people of different racial and ethnic groups seek mental health care? So again, the premise of our study was to look at trends in access to DBH services and potential barriers that might be specific to cultural groups. A brief background. The study took place, as I said, in San Bernardino County, which is the largest county in the United States. It's about 1 hour east of Los Angeles area. And we have a little over 2 million residents, 7% of which identify with the API community. And just to note, we selected the Vietnamese community within the API category because the Vietnamese language is approaching one of our threshold languages in the area. Some of the issues that we found in our literature review to begin with were that minorities suffer from disparities in mental health care, and this is despite whether they have equal, if not better, mental health status compared to their white counterparts. Mental health needs for minority, racial, ethnic groups have largely remained unmet thus far. Mental health care system continues to affect persons in minority groups more than whites, and this is in three areas: access to care, which is what we are considering, the amount of care that is received when it is needed, and the quality of care that is received. And lastly, San Bernardino County has shown lower than expected mental health indicators in comparison with other counties in our state of California. To review our methodology, we used a mixed methods approach, as similar to the study which was just presented. We ran two phases using qualitative research methods and tools of choice for focus groups and key informant interviews, and then also conducted a survey phase in which we developed our tool based off of themes that we found from our qualitative data. And we followed up with a secondary data analysis using some of the data sets from DBH. However, for the purpose of this presentation, we're just going to be reviewing mainly the results from the qualitative data. We believe that this project served as the beginnings of participatory research. Much of what would categorize it as participatory is our strength in collaborating with different community entities and community stakeholders. Our research team comprised of researchers at Loma Linda University, as well as from the Latino Health Collaborative, which is a 501c3 located in San Bernardino. We also had the opportunity to partner with three different cultural coalitions that are located in our county, and one of which was the API coalition. And then we also had the opportunity to speak and work very closely with the Vietnamese case manager from one of the clinics, who actually, ironically, is one of very few case managers who can speak Vietnamese and is from the Vietnamese community in our county. She actually is, I believe, the only case manager in one of three regions of our county. And then additionally, we formed a subunit research team consisting of Vietnamese students from the community who also happened to be attending at our university. Both of these research teams and the participants acted as liaisons to the Vietnamese community, helping in participant recruitment and retention, as well as serving as researchers collecting data and analyzing our data. Some of you have probably seen the schematic that takes you through the research process, and we'd just like to highlight areas where we think our strengths and weaknesses in following the methodology of CBPR. So initially, we started off on the wrong foot. DBH actually brought up the issue of wanting to conduct this cultural assessment, so the topic was brought up by a professional entity. But following up, proposal submission, study design was spearheaded by the cultural coalitions, as well as the 501c3 that I mentioned. Thirdly, participant recruitment and retention system, which I mentioned, was also spearheaded by the community stakeholders with which we were partnering. The fourth category, our measurement instruments, were developed by our community participants. And they were tested out too through the assessment. But following up, we actually, with the Vietnamese community, have not moved into the intervention phase, so I will not be able to speak about that at this time. If we could review some of the results and findings that we were able to collect through the partnerships that we had. General definitions, one point that was brought up by the Vietnamese community. We found that there was little to no distinction between neurological disorders and mental illnesses, and actually when speaking with professionals who work at CBOs, it's very common for them to mistake neurological disorders for mental illnesses. So if that's happening in the professional realm, it's actually to be a bit expected in some of these communities that are very isolated, such as the Vietnamese community. The second quote, which is provided, these are all quotes from our data. If you read the underlying text, it says, I have epilepsy. There is a lot of time personally. I feel like it has to do with being sad and worry. So they kind of synchronize the two and actually equate the two. Causes that were mentioned, emotions are not expressed. Everyday struggles are not expressed. This is very common, not only in the Vietnamese community, but across Asian communities as well. Barriers that were mentioned, one key structural barrier was language, obviously. Participants would mention coming to the clinic and having to wait there literally a full 8 hours before they could even interact with someone at the front desk because there was one translator in that area. And sometimes they would have to leave that day without being able to see the clinician. And this is in the setting where these are free services, so they're taking time out of their work day to come and see or to seek help, but they are unable to because of the language barrier. And secondly, goes hand in hand, lack of Vietnamese staff and physicians. One key attitudinal barrier that was identified was the perception of American doctors and culture. There's a lack of, general lack of distrust in the Western setting. Key cultural barriers that were identified. First, the general closed attitude of the Vietnamese community or culture. Their tendency to shelter their reputation. Honor is something that is very important across Asian cultures, and shame is something to be avoided at all costs. So in these settings, stigma has a more dramatic effect on the individuals. Secondly, the value of self-control kind of goes along with the value of honor. To show or to express that you might have a weakness or to be shown that you are a weak person is to show that you are out of control, and that's something that is not accepted by this culture. A couple of trends and unique exposures that came out of our analysis. One trend is that a lot of these mental illnesses tend to result in suicide, and that's something that you'll find in literature as well. This is linked to isolation, and especially with aging, a lot of the members or participants in our study were in the elderly category. One method of coping that was mentioned was faith in church, and not simply faith. The first quote pertains to praying so that you feel better. The second quote places the church as a center for social engagement, a place to go and speak with people and to be around friends, being they feel very isolated in the areas that they are living. One unique exposure, a lot of cases of post-traumatic stress disorder, and these are the repercussions of the Vietnam War. They cited conflicts and wartime, a lot of refugees from that area, and one statistic or one fact, just despite acculturation, high counts of mental illnesses are linked to trauma in this group. One individual mentioned that they are constantly having flashbacks throughout the day during their sleep. And so for that reason, it's something that's constantly on their minds. So there's no real space to ever be away from the repercussions. We'd like to emphasize these recommendations as community-driven strategies. These are recommendations that came out of the focus groups and the interviews, not put forth by researchers. And so these are strategies to kind of engage their community. One is to strengthen the existing support systems. And this would be to provide support to families by educating them and giving them tools to address mental health illnesses, or mental health issues, excuse me. And this is to serve kind of as a preventive measure, but also to keep things within that family structure before we move out into social circles, trying to be able to handle the added pressure of mental illnesses within the safety of your family structure. Secondly, it was recommended that we consider faith-based partnerships, being these are sites for social engagement and whatnot. These organizations and churches could serve as a platform of discussion, education, and referrals to mental health services, and could serve also as a nexus for social support and engagement. In the quote, it just says we have to search out places that are compatible just to talk. For example, the temple, it's a place to come out and socialize. So that social support and social engagement seem to be key indicators or very strong methods of coping in this community. The future direction, just to conclude, we believe that Project Access was a mechanism in which to allow the voice of this isolated community to be heard. Even though the community is largely growing, they are very dispersed in different pockets. And so through the partnerships with our graduate student researchers from the Vietnamese community, the various cultural coalitions, and the case manager with which we work, we believe that we are able to create a foundation. And hopefully, we will be able to move forward into the implementation phase by connecting churches, FBOs, and coalitions to build a stronger foundation with which to work. Thank you for your time.